And welcome back, everybody, to the Hangout in the Holy Land, the official podcast of LandGrantHolyLand.com, your free premier resource for all things Ohio State athletics news. I am your host, managing editor for the site, and SB Nation College League manager, Matt Brown. I am joined here by my trusted co-host, Mr. Colton Denning. We are recording the show the afternoon here of Tuesday, April 12th. You're probably going to listen to it on Wednesday. And we got a bunch to talk about. So what's good, buddy?
Not much, man. Ready to talk a little bit of Ohio State football. Spring game coming up this weekend. Ohio State basketball got a commitment, got some guard depth on the way. We'll get into that and just general thoughts coming up here.
There is a lot going on. The spring game coming up on Saturday being the biggest story. But before we kind of get too into the weeds there, I want to quickly talk about what you had mentioned first. You might have noticed already. Ohio State basketball picked up a commitment early this morning here on Tuesday, and it's somebody that, unless you are an absolute diehard basketball recruitnik, you probably haven't heard of this person, which is a little bit unusual, I think, for those of us who follow Ohio State, since you're typically not picking up kind of two-star-ish, really underrated kind of guys. Buckeyes picked up a JUCO commitment from 2016 guard C.J. Jackson. The scoop here on C.J., if you haven't picked this up here on the website, he was playing at a place called Eastern Florida State College, junior college, where he had been quite successful, was dropping nearly 17 points a game, shot 45% from downtown, four rebounds, four dimes, a reasonably efficient player. Somebody who had originally committed to George Mason as a freshman. George Mason has some coaching changes. He decides that's not the program for him, does a year at a junior college, and was picking up interest from UConn, UNLV, Cal, Missouri, a couple other big-name programs. It's a little unusual for Ohio State, just generally, not just Ohio State basketball, to go after JUCO players. The Buckeyes have only really picked up a couple in the Urban Meyer era, and it wasn't something that Jim Tressel really aggressively did as far as football. And I don't know about you, I can't remember the last junior college basketball player Ohio State picked up. Could you?
No, not at all. You really have to rack your brain, I think, to come back with a JUCO kid that came in. Like we talked about in last week's podcast with all the departures for the basketball team, that's the situation we're in now, is that they're looking for JUCO guys, and you get a kid out of Eastern Florida State College. But you look at the offer list, and you mentioned Cal, UConn, UNLV, I think to name the three biggest ones. Those are good programs, so it's not like this guy's offer list was coming from a bunch of MAC schools or a bunch of lower-level schools. So at least looking at the offers, it's good to see that this kid was wanted by other big-name programs that have had success recently.
The need for the Buckeyes to pick up an additional guard in general is really apparent. They're still going to host Cullen Neal. He's a graduate transfer from New Mexico, I think, in a couple of weeks. Tea leaves seem to think that he's probably more likely to head to the SEC. But as far as this recording is concerned, that there's still some time to go there. Ohio State's looking at a couple of other 2016 high schoolers. And this signing period begins very quickly, so there's really not a whole lot of time left. But it seems like on paper right now, and this is coming from somebody who's obviously not been able to do a ton of individual scouting on Jackson, this fits the need for Ohio State. You need somebody who can come in, be a secondary ball handler, play 10 to 15 minutes a night, be a competent three-point shooter, and it seems like all those boxes are checked. So it'll be interesting to see what happens with the rest of recruiting, because typically this late in the signing period for basketball, it's pretty boring for Ohio State. You're just kind of checking off the guys that had committed months ago. We had some drama a few years ago with Peyton Dastrup, who flipped to BYU, like kind of right at around this time. But now there's a lot more uncertainty. You know, the Buckeyes offered another point guard last night. You have Andre Wesson, who will be making his decision. He's a 6'7 wing out of Westerville South. He'll be committing Wednesday afternoon. That's a potential spot. Some of these might get rolled over for 2017. It's unclear, but it's good here that the Buckeyes at least filled a very large hole in their roster.
Yeah, having another guard better than having no guards. And you mentioned the three-point shooting, shot 45% from downtown last year. And this team can always use more shooting if what we've seen in the past 3 or 4 years continues, is that they haven't been an excellent shooting team. So you add him along with the mix of the other guards and forwards on the roster, and I think you got a nice little combination there. And speaking of the recruiting class, I would say if you're one of those Buckeye fans that doesn't necessarily follow basketball too hardcore unless they're good, I would recommend that you don't check out the 24/7 recruiting rankings, because right now they sit at 58, ninth in the Big Ten, and that's a little skewed because Derek Funderburk He's a four-star player, almost a five-star, and then Michael Porter. So their average is still really good, but just in terms of sheer volume, they're not at kind of where they've been in the past, especially with that class of 2015 we talked about last week.
Yeah, it's a smaller class, and Ohio State's obviously having to make up a ton of ground when most of the top 100, top 150 players are already committed, and it's difficult to get somebody to flip at this point. But the top six, top seven guys on this roster, the ones who are going to be playing the bulk of the minutes for next season, are all still pretty highly regarded prospects, a lot of experience here. It's just kind of filling in some of the gaps until the roster can really, I think, fully overhaul a little bit in 2017, but primarily in 2018 once there's some more scholarships opening up. Definitely, if you're not somebody who follows the team super closely, I would be paying attention a lot this week, since there's going to be, I would guess, at least one more commitment this week to Ohio State, and also probably the Buckeyes will hire a new assistant basketball coach. There's some rumors flying around at this point that it might be Chris Gent, former Ohio State assistant, was LeBron James' shooting coach, goes off to Sacramento Kings. He might come back to replace the dearly departed Jeff Bowles. And I don't know about you, but I think that would be an amazing hire for Ohio State, given that their offense has really kind of deteriorated a little bit since Gent left. And if there's one thing that this team needs, it's improving their shooting.
Yeah, agreed. I mean, we look at the percentages and just the overall offensive play that they've put together in the last couple of seasons. And even last year, I think when they were rolling a bit offensively right before they got into the tournament, if I recall, much of that had to do with just how good D'Angelo Russell was. And not that he put that team on his back last year, but you see the difference in this year's team and last year's team even just by losing him. So I think adding another assistant like Chris Gent, familiar with the program, obviously familiar with what Thad Matta wants to do, would be pretty perfect after losing a guy so instrumental like Jeff Bowles.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So there's going to be some more information there, but judging by the general traffic flows for our website and the conversation on Twitter and everything, you're probably, if you're listening to this, you're probably a little bit more interested in the other big story that's coming up here in a couple of days, and it's not getting into the real weeds with the administration of Ohio State's basketball program, and that is the spring game. So we'll get into the kind of the nitty-gritty positional breakdowns here in a second. But one thing that was interesting to me was Urban Meyer's remarks. I think this would have been on Monday, saying that he wanted 100,000 people to go to the spring game. The Buckeyes got nearly that. I think last year they were in the upper 90s. That would break some records. It would be the most trafficked spring game here over the past several seasons. One, do you think that that's possible? And two, is that even a good thing? I mean, have you been to a spring game before?
I haven't been to an Ohio State spring game, so I can't speak on to the craziness that is or isn't Ohio Stadium for that atmosphere. I don't think it's possible. If last year's team couldn't draw 100,000, given that they were coming off a national championship season and beating Alabama, beating Oregon, and crushing Wisconsin in the Big Ten championship, and with how that season ended and everybody coming back, they weren't able to completely cross that threshold of 100,000. I find it hard to believe that unless they just make a substantial push somehow or make the spring game free, I don't even know if it's $5 or $10 or what it is, it seems pretty impossible that they would beat that.
Yeah. Well, I'm not sure. You know, on one hand, yeah, you had a ton of attention last year because you figured that this would be the team they're defending national champions, they're bringing nearly everybody back. But that also meant that there wasn't a whole lot of intrigue for the actual spring game. People were being held out. There really weren't very many positions that were open, since you could kind of pencil in the returning starters nearly everywhere. The freshman class barely played. So, you know, you're coming in expecting the beginning of this coronation season. And this year is going to be completely different because nearly every position group is open. So you're going to have a bunch of unfamiliar names, a bunch of young talent, your first opportunity to see them. Really, one of the huge variables with this is the weather. I'm looking at this right now, and they are calling for a beautiful day in Columbus on Saturday, a very, very nice high temperature of 69 degrees and sunshine, which I think you absolutely need if you're trying to get a big turnout. And the tickets are pretty affordable. It's $5. It gets you in to see a lacrosse game beforehand. I think they're playing Michigan. Ohio State's men lacrosse has not been, they've been a little bit disappointing this season, but getting, you know, another game here might matter here to some folks. I haven't been to an Ohio State spring game either. I've seen it on TV when I was in college. I was often traveling around that time, and I think one year they played it somewhere else. The dirty little secret is that it's low-key kind of terrible football, right? Like, there's going to be some important starters that are going to be missing. You're going to have a lot of third stringers, some walk-ons who are playing here. The rules are going to be a little bit different. Like, I am not expecting aesthetically pleasing television product. I would expect this to be a very low-scoring game with some mistakes. And there's really not a ton of, like, actual hard and fast insights that I think you can take from this, because it's not exactly even close to like a real football product. So I mean, I'm not sure that me as a consumer, despite being a big Ohio State fan and a football nerd, I don't know if I would go. But clearly tens of thousands of other people feel differently. I would be surprised if they're able to match what they did last year, but I bet there's going to be 70,000 people at this thing, which is still pretty amazing.
Well, and the most intriguing thing, which you brought up about this year's spring game in comparison to last year's, is that last year seemed more static in terms of the roster, even the guys that were sitting out. We knew Braxton Miller was going to be a part of the team. We knew that JT Barrett, even though he wasn't healthy, was going to be competing with Cardale Jones. And Ezekiel Elliott, he had his role. The offensive line was pretty much set. Everything on defense was set. So you bring up the pantheon of boring spring games, and I don't really ever think there's been an exciting one. Last year probably took the cake, but at least for this season, there's going to be so much competition, whether that's for the backup quarterback job, who's going to step up at receiver. Running back seems to be still up in the air between Briante Dunn and Mike Weber as of now. And then you have everybody that was lost off of that defense, and you have all of these highly rated guys who are stepping up. So I think the best thing to look for in this spring game is not necessarily it being the best played football, but just a matter of, hey, let's watch this like a practice, see who's getting reps, and see who's competing. I mean, not to speak in coach speak, but it'll be nice to see the young guys just out there and competing and fighting for a job.
Let's talk a little bit about some of that competition. I look at this roster now, and we're not going to see exactly what the specific spring game rosters are going to look like, I think, for a little bit. But virtually everything is up for grabs. One difference is quarterback. You know, JT Barrett's probably only going to play a series or two. We'll see Joe Burrow. We'll see Collier play. And by all indications, Burrow has that number two quarterback spot pretty much locked up. He's a lot of coaches have said really positive things about him. I guess we'll kind of get to see how much he's grown and what he's capable of in this game. But virtually everywhere else on offense seems to be pretty wide open. We can kind of guess what position groups here, but I'm interested in like who specifically you are interested in seeing for this game and what they can do to perhaps change that conversation on the two deep.
I'm interested in the wide receivers, and in particular James Clark, who Urban Meyer mentioned has been coming on. You have Paris Campbell, who looked like he was going to get some major reps at the start of last season, got some run early in the Virginia Tech game, but never really flourished as a pass catcher. Johnny Dixon, KJ Hill, and Austin Mack. I think that if you're going to watch any position group, it has to be those guys, because they're all relatively new. Even the guys that played last year, they're going to be stepping up into new roles. And I think that eventually they're going to show out, because they're actually wide receivers, not to throw shade at last year's group. But other than Michael Thomas, it wasn't really a clinic on how to play the wide receiver position last season. So I know these guys are green and they're very young, but I do think there's a lot of talent there. And like we talked about, this isn't going to be the be-all, end-all we've seen with other receivers in spring game history just because you have a big game. Mike Thomas, I think Torian Washington was a spring game superstar back in the day. But I really want to watch James Clark and even a guy like Austin Mack to see how they do in their first real big setting in Ohio Stadium.
Yeah, there's a big difference between playing in front of 6,000 high school fans, even in highly competitive games, and then getting 60, 70,000 people to come out here for practice, especially at a position group that's going to be so competitive. I agree that I think that position group is going to be the most interesting here. I would expect Ohio State, just like they did last year, to throw the ball a lot more than they probably will during the actual season for the spring game, get their quarterbacks a little bit more work, get their younger offensive linemen some experience in pass protection. Austin Mack is a big name here. Johnny Dixon's a big name. Again, it's like you had said, because he's been getting a lot of positive press from coaches and praise, even though he's kind of fallen off the mind of a lot of Ohio State fans. I'm interested to see what happens to Torrance Gibson. You know, you have this guy that came in as this exceptionally well-regarded prospect, you know, athlete. He came in at a quarterback, looks like that ship's probably sailed for him, and transitioning to wideout. And we have, you know, our recruiting analysts and other people have said, this guy has first-round potential as an athlete if you can get him to transition to wide receiver. And he's got that size, he's got that speed. He's learning a new position, and this group just got a lot more competitive, and it's going to get even more competitive when you look at some of the names that Ohio State's targeting for this coming recruiting class of wide receiver. Is he able to make that adjustment, and can we see any of that here in the spring game? Since my impression from kind of reading between the lines is that he's still behind a couple of guys right now. Whether he's able to perform under some of this pressure and make himself stand out, I think that's going to be that'll be an interesting thing here to see.
If you want to look at the history of that wide receiver position under Urban Meyer and why I feel so confident about it, and in terms of just Torrence Gibson himself, Zach Smith and the rest of their offensive staff, you can think whatever you want to about Zach Smith and his personality on Twitter, and I know he kind of came in regarded as the weak link, but over the years, I mean, he's developed Devin Smith into a second-round pick. He developed Evan Spencer into a kid that's getting playing time with the Washington Redskins. Corey Brown developed into a very good player and played a major role on a Panthers team that almost won the Super Bowl this season. And then just looking in terms of last year's group, Mike Thomas was very raw when he came in. He's probably going to be at least a second-round pick. And then Jalen Marshall and Braxton Miller, two guys who aren't receivers in Miller's case. He was a quarterback in college, and in Marshall's case, he was a quarterback in high school. They've developed all of these guys, so I think it may not happen with Gibson just because it happened with them, but at least there's a history there. So I think if you're comfortable in one coach really developing a player and molding them at a different position, given his physical traits, 6'4", what, 205,
yeah,
and blazing fast speed and the ability to jump, I feel pretty confident that Zach Smith and the rest of that staff, they're going to put a plan in place and be able to make him a competent receiver, at least to start off, and then we'll see where we go from there.
That's a great point. This coaching staff really does have a record of being able to turn perhaps imperfect recruits or imperfectly aligned recruits into productive, not just college football players, but recently into productive, or, you know, at least paid NFL players. Maybe we would have wished that there would have been a little bit more of that with Braxton Miller last year, given everything else that happened with the offense. Perhaps that didn't happen as much as defensible, but that's probably a positive sign for the development here of Mr. Gibson.
Can we talk about a position that hasn't been developed at least last year? I know you brought up quarterback. How comfortable are you with the quarterback situation behind JT Barrett?
Right now, for this season, I do feel pretty comfortable. I saw what Burrow was able to do at the high school level, just absolutely barbecuing people. I think he played my alma mater, Granville, in the playoffs, and they won by like 50 points. And he was somebody that I don't think he got his composite fourth star until the very end of the recruiting cycle. It was overlooked, I think, by a couple of people, but just technically did really well. And I've heard nothing but positive things to say about him. He's physically a little bit different from some other Ohio State quarterbacks here, but do I think that he could come in and manage a game and run the read option a couple of times after this year? Sure. And then we have Dwayne Haskins coming in, who I don't think is going to be able to beat Burrow for the number two job because he's getting to campus late. I would expect him to redshirt, and he might not have been the most polished player immediately coming out of high school in that class, but has maybe the highest ceiling of any other incoming quarterback for Ohio State over the next year and a half or so. So I feel pretty good with that threesome. If Collier has to play, Ohio State probably has bigger problems. But by the tone of your questioning, it makes me think that perhaps you are less confident.
I am. And I don't know as much about Joe Burrow. I remember watching some of his high school highlights, so I'll defer to you on that. I know I saw an Instagram video of him yesterday getting absolutely dump-trucked by Marshawn Lattimore in a practice, but that's not a good indication of his quarterbacking ability, but I guess we'll see this Saturday. But, I mean, other than that, Stephen Collier, you know, he exists on the roster, I guess would be the best way to put it. And then I am confident with Dwayne Haskins. Maybe that's new toy smell. You know, you get a new toy when you're a kid and it replaces the ones you used to play with. And not to compare these guys to inanimate objects or anything, but I think you look at him and his highlights and what this staff and Meyer particularly has had success with. And I think that eventually Haskins may be that guy before the end of the season, that if they do need somebody to come in for either an injured Barrett or just to give him a rest with maybe how many times they might run him this season, I think that Haskins might be that guy. But outside of Burrow, at least for now, the guys that are there, I really feel uncomfortable with what they have.
Hopefully it doesn't get to that point. I don't expect this Ohio State team to get into too many blowouts, I think, at the beginning of the season. So I don't know if we're going to have a ton of folks burning red shirts or getting a bunch of extra playing time here. But I think I'm a little bit more cautiously optimistic. And given some of the talent that's coming at quarterback over the next class, especially since it's looking increasingly like Ohio State's going to sign two quarterbacks for the 2017 recruiting class, I feel pretty good about that position group. And there's enough other talent that I think you could potentially scheme around some more athletic limitations if they had to. Hopefully Barrett doesn't get injured, and hopefully this is the year that maybe they're not running the read option and having him get 21 carries a game, because it looks like there's a lot more people either at H-back or wide out or running back who can touch the ball and help preserve him a little bit. And maybe that shakiness is why he won't get quite as many carries as he did before when you have a Cardale Jones or a Braxton Miller or somebody else coming off the bench.
Well, and for Saturday, I think it would be nice to see just competent QB play. I don't think we're looking for anything like 34 of 40 and Barrett and Burrow combined for 700 yards passing and 8 touchdowns. But I think, especially behind Barrett, if we can just see some competent quarterback play, which we didn't in last year's spring game, that would be a nice little change of pace just to give that added feeling of, okay, at least we know if JT Barrett goes out or they need to use Joe Burrow, then they're going to be in a decent place offensively throwing the ball.
You know, it'll be funny to see if that actually happens here, because my big spring game prediction is that we're not going to see a whole lot of offense, period. And a big part of that is going to be the disparity between these two lines. I don't expect all of Ohio State's projected starting five on the offensive line to really see a whole lot of time in the spring game. I would be surprised if Pat Elflein plays very much. Could see folks at guard maybe not playing a whole lot. And so, you know, given that Ohio State's, I think, defensive line is deeper than the offensive line, especially if you take away a couple of starters and get a little bit more aggressive, since I think Ohio State's backups might be live rather than a green jersey here for Barrett. Wouldn't be surprised if two young quarterbacks are going to have to run for their life or undergo a lot of pressure. How well a kind of patchwork redshirt freshman, sophomore, redshirt sophomore offensive line is able to hold up against Hubbard, able to hold up against McMillan and Booker and Hilliard and all these guys that are going to be coming after them. That's going to be another really fun thing, because if Ohio State's line is not able to play similar to a level that they did last year with a bunch of new, albeit highly regarded names, all these fun toys on the outside and with skill positions are going to be a little bit moot.
Well, and that's another thing I think to look for, is that if it is going to be a low-scoring game, then just focus on the lines, and especially all of those young players on the defensive line. I know Draymond Jones has been getting rave reviews in practice. There's a lot of young inside and edge players that are coming in very highly regarded, that even if they're going up against a second-team offensive line, let's see what the youngsters have. And there's so many of those guys on the other side offensively that are young and haven't seen playing time, given how static the line's been with its starters the last couple of seasons, that it'll be nice to see all of these highly recruited youngsters finally get some playing time against one another.
I don't know about you, and then, you know, we can kind of hit this and maybe move on. I'm particularly interested in some of these individual defensive battles or defensive players that might be able to be coming up here, especially with Sean Cornell, somebody who was recruited initially as a defensive end. It seems that he's bulked up a little bit and is moving inside to play defensive tackle, a position where there's a little bit less depth or less certainty along Ohio State's defense. He's apparently been playing very well, was a super highly regarded recruit. Really athletic, and if you bring in some tackles that are able to retain some of that mobility that they had as ends, then you have potentially a really exciting defensive line unit. It would not be shocking to me if that position group really wins the day here, I'm going to be really interested to see what kind of penetration he's able to get, what kind of tackling he's able to do. He'll be a name to watch. That one, and I think what happens with the strong side linebackers, I think Chris Worley is penciled in as the starter right now, but he's going to have a huge battle with Jerome Baker. I think they're both going to play here. It'll be fun to see which one's looking a little bit better in the spring game as well. Is there any individual defensive player or defensive position group battle that you're going to be really looking for?
Well, do we have an update on Justin Hilliard? Is he going to play in the spring game?
I thought so.
Yeah, at the linebacker position, and you brought it up, they're replacing so much other than Raekwon McMillan that whether it's Justin Hilliard, Dante Booker, Chris Worley, one or two of those guys, at least two of those guys, and then Jerome Baker too, are going to have to step up and really fill some of the roles that have been left behind. And I think Darren Lee last year had a very up and down season, probably not as productive and as consistent as 2014, but he did so much at that weak side linebacker spot, whether it was covering slot guys, playing the bubble screen, coming out and snuffing a run. There's just so many different things that he did that I think one of these guys is going to have to step up into that role, and it'll be interesting to see how these linebackers are used. So just individually on the defensive side of the ball, I'm going to look at Jerome Baker, and then if Hilliard plays, I really want to see kind of how he is health-wise and how they're using him.
This will definitely be the most interesting spring game, I think, since we started this website in terms of position battles. I don't know if it's going to be an interesting football game. In fact, I would wager it probably won't be. And maybe we're not going to be getting a ton of really kind of hard, fast conclusions, but I think we'll be able to get a little bit of insight about what's happening with a few of these groups, and maybe a name will kind of jump out a little bit. Like Nick Connor, I think last year, was a guy that really wasn't on a lot of Ohio State fans' radar as a potential rotation player, and he had a big coming out party, I think, in that spring game. And coaches have said really good things about him, too. I think he would have played last year if he hadn't gotten injured. So maybe somebody else will kind of pop up and assume that mantle here for this year. So I think that's a good stopping point as far as the spring game is concerned. Was there anything else, Ohio State-wise or otherwise, that you feel like we should be talking about right now?
Well, I feel like we'd be remiss to not mention at least the Will Smith news. I don't know how much you want to get into it, but I mean, if you're listening to this podcast, I'm assuming we all know Will Smith, former Ohio State defensive lineman, played for the New Orleans Saints for a long time in the NFL, was shot and killed this past weekend. Just a completely tragic story, what with him being with his family and everything that surrounds that. So very sad news about not only a great Buckeye player, former Buckeye player, but also from all accounts, a great man as well.
That's horrible. It's horrible, right? Like some of you guys may know that I used to live in New Orleans. I taught elementary school there. I've been to that neighborhood. We still, you know, I still have a lot of friends who live in that city. And the violent crime situation is still very much a part of life there. And it's completely senseless. And I feel horrible for his family, for the people that no longer have him in his life. And it's over something as trivial as what happened is horrible. I'm glad Ohio State is going to commemorate him a little bit here during the spring game. I'm glad that Saints coach Sean Payton is using this moment to try to talk about some of these structural problems here that are in that area. It's terrible. It's, you know, he's great at Ohio State, to make a good person, and it's, you know, someone's life was cut down too soon over something very stupid. So that is an unfortunate note here. I guess there's one other thing that we should very briefly mention before we wrap this up. If you're still listening at this point, and I filed something to Landgren that published on Tuesday afternoon. I'm wondering if you have any other new thoughts, but are we going to have to talk about satellite cams for another damn month?
I hope not. I really hope that this is over. And it's reached a point where there's so much stupidity involving the conversation. And then you have David Shaw with some pretty innocuous comments that really weren't that bad when you look at the full context of what he said. And that gets blown out of proportion, and everybody in SEC country is, well, David Shaw's calling us all stupid, saying we aren't educated. So the whole conversation has just reached it already reached the tipping point, I think, when it first started. But now we've entered this portion where I don't really care whether or not they have them. I just want the story to be over with.
Yeah, it doesn't actually matter that much. You know, is the big thing here, especially for a big program. It matters much more for smaller programs. And we've been talking about this here for a year. I filed something, and I think the way that, like, the Michigan press, including those who aren't, like, on the recruiting scene, where I think are kind of more obviously tied to the program, which is, like, the beat writers, the level that they've been kind of carrying water for Harbaugh has been a little bit unseemly throughout this whole thing. Not that Ohio State's beat writers wouldn't be doing the same thing if Urban and Harbaugh were switched in this situation. And I'm ready for something else weird to happen in the sports so we can talk about something else, because this ruling is stupid. The way people voted is stupid. This debate is stupid. It hurts people over something that ultimately, for the folks that are getting all riled up about it, just isn't that important.
Well, I think, too, the biggest thing for me and the biggest problem that I have with it is it just seems like it's more continuing legislation that affects the kids, and it affects people at the bottom of the totem pole that aren't necessarily discussed. And I know that Urban Meyer brought this up yesterday in his press conference. That's and you can attest to this more than I can, but he brought up how that's going to eliminate a bunch of opportunities for kids that would likely end up at MAC schools to kind of get their showcase. And I think that's the one thing that all of this legislation has done, whether that's the power conference shifting or now with satellite camps. We don't focus on the sport as a whole, and it mostly just clusters around 10 or 15 teams in what these big names want to happen. And it's really unfortunate for the game as a whole.
You know, I feel like every time when my writing has to mirror political writing, whether that's writing about legislative, you know, heckling and backroom deals, or whether that's crime reporting, or whether that's, you know, writing about these kind of back-end financial things, that's when it sucks. And unfortunately, that's always a big part of the off-season. I feel like this last month, my work has been dominated by either this or the stupid-ass Georgia FOIA, you know, law. And that's probably where we're going to be headed, at least here until June. And that's depressing, and I wish it would all go away. And that feels like a good place here to stop now that we've this conversation, I think, has taken a markedly depressing turn. We should probably talk about Pokemon more next time. You can follow our site at landgrantholyland.com. We are on Facebook at landgrantholyland. We are on Twitter, landgrant33. You probably know all of that. You can subscribe to this show on Blog Talk Radio, on iTunes, on wherever else that you get podcasts. And you can follow us both on Twitter. There's more information here about Ohio State recruiting news for basketball that's gone up here for this week. There's going to be some more spring game preview, recap, and post-game information that's going to go down this week. We have some more Ohio State non-revenue sports, since this is a big week here for baseball up here. Just a lot. You don't want to miss it, because there's a lot going on.
Yeah, and I'm sure you can catch us next week back here on the pod making some just crazily hot takes regarding the spring games. I'm going to vouch for Eric Glover Williams to be the new Chris Gamble. That's where I'm going. He's the player I'm hitching my wagon to this spring. EGW coming in, hopefully with the Superman shirt like he wore back when he was in high school. But one last note for the podcast. We had a listener leave us a comment last week. Leave a review for us. The best way that we can improve this podcast and to give you guys the content that you want to hear is if you leave us a review, leave us a comment on the Hangout in the Holy Land page on iTunes. Feedback, comments, concerns, constructive criticism, all that is always appreciated. So please, if you have the time, take it, leave us a review, tell us we're great, tell us we suck, I don't care. Just give us some sort of feedback so we can gauge what you want to hear for future podcasts, because that always helps us.
That's a great point. You can also always email me with feedback or questions, matt.brown@sbnation.com. I know we've heard a lot of your feedback about occasional audio issues. We changed our rig. We think those have improved over the last couple of weeks. We'll tweak things or bring things on board as you need them. In the meantime, I'm Matt. That's Colton. Thanks for listening. And as always, go Bucks.